then Don's going to come in.
That's my iPad.
And try to close a door that latches and it's not, right, and give you a hard time.
I got to find that iPad.
Well, this to so the with best that,
all right, can right now. I'm going to so. Be at
you know,
the
a couple
podium.
Of years, yeah. 3 or 4 years ago, TJC came out with the requirement to inventory fire doors, make sure they perform properly. The hinges are proper, the undercuts are proper, the closing and latching and all that's proper. So a lot of effort has gone into door hardware and door operations over the last 3 to 4 years. And with that, we have a group that's getting ready to give us all we need to know about door hardware.
Yeah, we had a bit of a mishap, so we need to...
How about... Yep. I'm sorry for that. So we have a little bit of inconvenience. My colleague lost his iPad, where he has all the information that we're going to present today. So we're going to do our best today, so give us a minute until he connected his computer into, an outlet. Mm-hmm. Are you ready? Ready?
Right, so I make sure I'm on here.
Do you have that on?
Just checking this. Can you hear me? Okay.
Guys, I just want to say there's cookies. There's a cookie break waiting for you after this. All right? I don't know if we got macadamias out there, but I hope we do.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Sorry for the inconvenience. Good afternoon, everyone. I am Ramon Moll, and this is my colleague, Greg Mayers. And we are so excited to be here today in this great event. We interact with doors and hardware in every day, and most people, they don't give it a thought. But we know that hardwares and doors are designed with a specific purpose, whether it's life safety, weatherproofing, security, or privacy. So Greg and I work for Flat Architects in the healthcare studio as a project architects. And today, we're going to focus our presentation on how doors and hardwares applies to hospitals and healthcare facilities. See? Okay, one back.
One more.
Where's this one? Oh, sorry. Okay, give me just a second so I can... Why is it not working? Ah. Let's try. Give me just a... Now one more. Okay, got it. Okay, our four learning objectives are... Objective number one is to understand the fire and smoke requirement for doors in relationship to location. Objective number two is understand the requirement for doors and means of egress and options to secure them for health, safety, and welfare of the patient.
Objective number three is to be able to integrate door requirements of the various doors into the project. And objective four is to be able to develop a correct program of testing and maintenance for the doors that will be installed in the project.
Before we dive in into the topic of doors and hardware, I would like to bring this conversation into a historical context and talk about a fire that happened 50 years ago in a hospital. This is the Hartford, Connecticut Hospital. The building was designed and built in 1948 after World War II, and it came with one guarantee that it's going to be among the most fireproof buildings in the country. At the time, as we know, the codes were less enforced, and it was more like a voluntary action of the owner. On December 8th of 1961, it was a Friday, another typical day in the hospital for doctors, staff, patients, and visitors. According to a report of that day, about 793 patients were in the hospital. 100 of them were women that had their babies, and there were also 2,700 employees. And we know in 1961, it was acceptable to smoke in hospital and public places. On the afternoon of that same day, somebody decided to take a lit cigarette and throw it into the trash chute. At that time, gravity chute systems were commonly used for manage the trash. And there was a common misconception, that the riser of the chute were discharged directly into the incinerator, but that was not the case in this hospital because that riser was discharging into a trash container. The cigarette fell in a mountain of papers and a highly combustible material, and then what happened, it just caused a fire. Some of the reports says that in the past, this type of fire happened, and there was not too much of a concern of the hospital staff because they were able to manage the fire, they were extinguish the fire without even have to call to the fire department. However, at this time, the fire, start to rapidly intensify, producing heat and pressure. The chute door on the ninth floor exploded, and leaving the opening completely uncovered, allowing the flame and the smoke to spread into the corridor and throughout the building. The fire continued spreading quickly because the corridors were the finishes of the corridor were a high combustible material, and there was no sprinklers. The temperature in the area rose very quick to 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit and produced an immense pressure over the doors, threatening to blow them, including the cross-corridor doors that was protecting or isolating the south wind from the north wind, putting the entire floor into a problem, compromising the entire floor. Dozens of patients and staff made it into the south wing, entered into rooms, and they closed their doors. They prevented of the smoke coming into the room by sealing the edges of the doors with wet towels and paper. All of them that stayed behind doors, they saved their lives. A nurse on the 12th floor, realizing that the hospital was compromised, she pulled the alarm. The firefighter arrived at the site and noticed that the people trapped on the 9th floor were breaking windows, screaming, and ready to jump to escape the inferno. Immediately, they raised their ladder close to the building as possible and positioned it to a maximum height. The 10-foot ladder at that time was one of the biggest ladders they had. It just went up and only reached between the 9th and the 8th and 9th floor in one side of the building. So the photo that you see on the upper right shows a desperate firefighter in his effort to help the people and in full gear at the top of the ladder. He leapt into the ninth floor window, and with his feet swinging free, he pulled himself into the room and entered the floor. So the name of that hero is Richard. It was Richard Tejerian. So once the firefighters get into the floor, they move fast, assessing the situation, closing the doors, shouting instruction to the people, and in 30 minutes, they were able to extinguish the fire. During that fire, the staff mobilized 108 patients from the ninth floor in 45 minutes. Later, the hospital discharged 263 patients that they were enough and healthy enough, and others were relocated in the same campus. Sadly, and that's the difficult part, 16 people died as a result of the fire. One doctor, one nurse, two staff, five visitors, seven patients. Others were injured and suffered of smoke inhalation and carbon monoxide poisoning. The damage of the building at that time, it was evaluated or calculated in $350,000. That is an equivalent of between $5 to $7 million today. The Hartford Hospital leadership was deeply affected by this situation. The CEO of the hospital at that time was Stuart Hamilton, and he said, "We are going to investigate this. We are going to investigate this, and we are going to change the way the hospitals are built." They were transparent and collaborated with the authorities, determining exactly what happened. The records of the incident and the investigation is quite detailed, and all the documentation is available for public use. So they didn't keep anything in secret. Say, "We're going to expose what's going on. We're going to show everybody." And obviously, all the investigator, the NFPA, all the authority get involved in this, and they were trying to find what was the problem and how can we avoid this. As a result of this fire, the National Fire Protection Association, NFPA, made changes to the 1963 NFPA 101 Life Safety Code for hospital, including requiring sprinklers for trash chutes. Other challenges expose this fire are challenges that we are still facing today in hospital, and that includes response, notification, crowd management, and building evacuation. Others consideration, and now relevant to this presentation, about doors and hardware are the following. Doors and hardware play a critical role achieving and maintaining the safety. In Hartford fire, those who stay behind doors, they survive the fire. Hallways and dead end. At that time, they limited the dead end to 30 feet, and otherwise, you're going to have to place an exit door. This is recognizing the importance of the appropriate number of exits in the means of egress. In Hartford Hospital, they were trapped in the south wind without way out. Fire compartmentalization. They further developed more efficient way to or type of wall to separate the smoke compartments. There was another revaluation and related to cross corridor doors in a smoke compartment. The current standard required dual egress. In 1961, it was just one big door that would cover 8-foot door that covered the entire corridor. And once you close that door, there was no opportunity for people just to get out of or move into a different compartment. Another thing that is important to, it was typical in 1961 to use the rolling latching. So after this code revision, all the patients' rooms, doors, and in many other locations, they have to include a positive latching system.
Okay, the codes referenced in this presentation include the 2018 North Carolina State Building Code, 2018 North Carolina State Fire Prevention Code, the 2015 version of NFPA 101 or Life Safety Code, NFPA 80 standard for fire doors, NFPA 105 standards for the installation of smoke door assemblies, and UL 1784 standard for the air leakage testing of door assemblies.
In flat architects, life safety, like all, I'm pretty sure in all the engineers and architect office, life safety is a priority. In our case, each project team is in charge to develop a strategy and preparing and maintaining the life safety during design, construction, and let's put it, planning, design, and construction. Life safety plans, this is a view of one of our life safety plan in small building. So they must include important requirements that can be found in local codes and the NFPA. Those requirements include the identification of fire and smoke boundaries, smoke compartment boundaries and sizes, determination of occupant loads and exit width, clearly mark the means of egress and all its components, location of exit signs, define the sprinkled areas, and identify the fire extinguisher's location. I want to say that because for the purpose of this presentation, we created these fictitious plans, and I want you to know that this is not the type of plan that we do in our projects, but I just wanted to make it easier for us to go through the plans and show the doors that we're going to have a conversation in some type of context. The plan shows a central corridor with room on both sides, two small compartments, different type of walls. We have non-rated wall, small partition, small barriers, one-hour fire barrier wall, two-hour fire barrier wall, and exterior walls. The plan also illustrates an egress path from the remote location on the bottom to the exit discharge on the top. We will use this path of egress, like I said, to place in context our doors and describe the several type of doors that our imaginary friend will encounter as he travels the path looking for an exit. Okay, so the first door that we're going to talk about is what the door A is, a single door located in a non-rated wall that provides access to the exit, typically found in offices, closet, rooms within suite. Greg, what can you tell us about the requirement of this type of door according to the code?
Well, number one, this door is the most basic type of door you'll ever encounter in this hierarchy of doors, and it's typically found within a suite or inside of a room. It's a non-rated door, doesn't require positive latching or self-closing hardware. Closet door inside a patient room or operating room doors within a suite would be some examples of this condition. Push-pull hardware or roller latches would be acceptable if so desired. Some other basic requirements for doors and the means of egress would be to provide 32 inches minimum clear opening, which takes into consideration the door thickness and frame stops. So essentially a 3-foot door is your minimum size. The hardware used to operate the door needs to be located between 34 and 48 inches above the finished floor. And if a vision panel is provided, it must be tempered safety glazing. And the bottom of the glazing needs to be a maximum of 43 inches above the finished floor for accessibility requirements.
Thank you, Greg. So if we continue along our circulation path, the next door we're going to find is the door B. This is another corridor door located in a zero-hour small partition. In groups I-2, corridor wall must be constructed as a small partition in accordance to the North Carolina Building Code, Section 710. Greg, what can you add about the requirement of these type of doors?
Okay, the intent of corridors is to limit the transfer of smoke And these would be doors from rooms or suites that fall into this category. No fire rating, smoke gasketing, or closure is required on these doors. The doors must be positive latching as required by Section 183635 of the Life Safety Code and Section 40731 of the North Carolina State Building Code. Section 710523 of the North Carolina State Building Code stipulates doors and smoke partitions shall be self or automatic closing where required elsewhere in this code. And Section 407442 regarding I2 care suites does not mention any requirements for these doors to be self or automatic closing. Section 183611 also states door closing devices shall not be required in corridor wall openings of this type. The intent is for the doors to stay latched when closed. In an emergency, trained staff goes through the unit checking rooms and closing corridor doors to maintain the integrity of the smoke-tight corridor. On a pair of doors, as shown here, typically you'd have an active and an inactive leaf in cases where only one door is needed most of the time. Section 183638 of the Life Safety Code requires the inactive leaf to have an automatic flush bolt to provide positive latching. Typically, this is a top bolt only configuration, as the additional bottom bolt is not required for non-rated applications, which eliminates the need for a floor strike. An astragal or astragal seal is also provided to resist the passage of smoke at the meeting edge of the doors, and a maximum of undercut of 1 inches or 1 inch is permitted.
Thank you, Greg. A lot of information, right? So the next door is door B1. This is another corridor door. In this case, it's an unequal pair located in a 0-hour smoke partition, typically found in patient rooms. Greg, what else can you tell us about these type of doors?
Okay, Ramon. Well, this is, again, like what we had previously looked at. It's a corridor door in this case, but it's designed for getting more equipment through the opening into the patient room. It has a substantial active leaf, which is used in most cases, including egress from the room. And then there's a smaller inactive leaf when you need that extra clearance. The inactive leaf remains latched, typically with a constant latching automatic flush bolt to keep the door latched in place when it's not being used. A hospital latch is shown here, and it's used frequently on patient room doors because you can simply push or pull on the handle without using your hand, actually, to retract the latch bolt for easy hands-free operation. And because it's a pair, we do an astragal or an astragal seal will be needed to resist the passage of smoke at that meeting edge between the doors. Typically, we will provide fairly substantial protection plates to protect the door from abuse on the bottom half. And again, the maximum undercut's going to be 1 inch. The doors may have vision panels into the room. However, a lot of times we may not have those panels, so we can have extra privacy, or we may use frosted or etched glazing to allow for light transfer. It depends on the application. Okay, and if glazing is provided, again, it must be tempered safety glazing. If these doors are for a patient isolation room or a protective environment room, the doors will need closers and a coordinator to ensure they remain closed and latched, and that's if an overlapping astragal is used. The undercut will need to be minimized to restrict airflow in that instance as well at the bottom of the door. This is, done to maintain pressure differential between the room and the corridor. In certain instances, we'll have a door sweep as well to further seal the undercut.
Thank you, Greg. Mm-hmm. The door B2 is another corridor door, single, located in a 0-hour smoke partition, typically found in support rooms like nourishment rooms. Greg, can you develop a little bit more the requirements about the requirement of these doors?
Well, this is another type of corridor door in this case with positive latching hardware. The half vision panel with safety glazing is provided for better visual into the room. And one of the things to highlight on this door is the door protection, which does not have to be rectilinear necessarily or stainless steel. It can be rigid sheet vinyl material in a custom shape and color that's incorporated into the overall aesthetics of the corridor design. And you can use that those results to have a more pleasant experience for all occupants of the space, while at the same time providing adequate protection for the bottom half of the door, where that's likely to get the most abuse.
Thank you, Greg. Door B3, it's a sliding door, single in this case, non-rated. We are showing this installed in a non-rated wall. These doors can be found in patient rooms. This is a very popular type of door because provide an easy access to the room and saving space. Greg, what else can you tell us about this?
Well, Ramon, as you mentioned, these are gaining more popularity, and we've utilized these types of surface sliding doors both inside of patient rooms and also exam rooms along corridor walls. The options given by manufacturers allow for ladder pulls, as shown here, for non-latching conditions to simply open and close the door as needed. There are also positive latching options for corridor applications. We primarily use them for space-saving reasons, or the design doesn't allow enough space for using a swing door. But also, decorative panels can be used in the door, as shown here, to allow some natural light to penetrate the space while still providing some visual privacy. These doors slide along a track housed in an overhead valance with a style pocket on the latch side that receives the door when fully closed. Gasketing is located between the door and surface of the wall to provide a seal around the opening. Walls running perpendicular to these doors and other obstructions such as wall sconces need to be taken into consideration during design with the placement of these doors, since they need to slide well past the opening to provide the required clearance. And the opening and door itself will need to be oversized to some degree because the door needs to extend past the rough opening to allow enough clearance for proper operation of the hardware and egress.
Thank you, Greg. The door B4 is another type of sliding doors. In this instance, we are showing a door with two panels. They are available in three panels and four panels, depending on the need of the hospital. This door is, in this case, we install it in a zero-hour partition, and you can find these type of doors in ICU rooms. Greg, can you tell us about the requirement of this room based on code?
Well, as you mentioned, Ramon, these doors are commonly used in ICU care areas throughout the hospital. They're equipped with full glazing to maximize the ability for staff to observe the patient. The sliding mechanism is in the header assembly with a trackless design. In this case, they are corridor doors and have positive latching hardware. The doors are also equipped with gasketing that provides an effective seal and smoke rating, meeting the requirements of UL 1784 and NFPA 105 for air leakage. Self-closing applications will be required for isolation and protective environment rooms, and the doors are designed to break away into the room to avoid door encroachment issues into the corridor, and full breakout applications will allow staff to easily move large mobile equipment and hospital beds in and out of the room.
Okay, thank you, Greg. So I'm going to add a little bit more complexity of the requirements. Let's talk about operating rooms. We are presenting this door in a zero-hour small partition. What are the requirements for operating room according to code?
Well, Ramon, this is a corridor application, again, of an operating room door, so we must consider positive latching in addition to the fact that we've installed an auto operator on this door. So some of the considerations would be we need to introduce a latching mechanism that works in conjunction with the auto operator. Typically, we will use a hospital latch and a fail-secure electric strike to maintain the positive latching. The reason we use a fail-secure electric strike is to maintain the latching during a power loss. Egress is not an issue because the hospital latch can be used on the room side to retract the latch bolt and open the door. An automatic flush bolt is required in the inactive leaf, so when the active leaf closes, it depresses a trigger on the edge of the inactive leaf, and the flush bolt is projected into the head of the door frame, which then latches the inactive leaf. The electric strike is installed in the edge of the inactive leaf, providing a means for latching the active leaf. We typically like to provide a 4-inch head on our hollow metal door frames for ample mounting surface area, reinforced as well for the auto operator. And typically you'll want to install the operator on the corridor side since it tends to be the push side of the doors in a lot of cases, and it's a more efficient application to do that with the operators. But it also allows for servicing outside the OR on the corridor side of the doors versus inside the operating room. We show door protection plates here, and we've talked a little bit about that previously. It's a good thing to have on OR doors with a lot of carts and beds going through the doors, and you'll probably want to use stainless steel because it's a heavier duty. The auto operators will also help to reduce damage over the life of the door. An astragal or astragal seal is provided to resist the passage of smoke. It's also a good consideration for an operating room in general to limit airflow through the door opening. The undercut should also be minimized for the same reason. Another consideration is to use touchless actuators for hands-free operation of the doors. One of the things we've been doing on projects at the request of users is to incorporate an override switch inside the operating room, which will disable the operator during medical procedures so the doors are not inadvertently actuated from the corridor side.
Thank you, Greg. The door C is another corridor door, in this case double in a 0-hour small partition found in elevator lobbies. Greg, what is the difference between this door and the other corridor doors?
Well, Ramon, these doors are required in high-rise I-2 occupancies where the elevator connects more than 3 stories, except at the level of exit discharge and buildings protected by an automatic sprinkler system. And these doors are a little bit different in that they are located in a 0-hour smoke partition, very similar to a corridor door, but they have additional requirements. Chapter 30 of the North Carolina State Building Code, which covers elevators, makes specific reference to Section 710.523 in Section 3006.3.2, which states, where required elsewhere in the code, doors and smoke partitions shall be self or automatic closing by smoke detection in accordance with Section 716.593. So therefore, these doors are not required to be fire rated, but they are required to be self-closing with positive latching hardware. Smoke gasketing is also required by the North Carolina State Building Code in Section 710.522 as referenced in Chapter 30. And this requires the doors to meet the requirements for smoke and draft control door assembly in accordance with UL 1784 and NFPA 105. An astragal or astragal seal is provided to resist the passage of smoke at the meeting edge of the doors. Because these doors are required to close and latch properly, pairs of doors in this location would require a closer and potentially a coordinator if an active leaf with an automatic flush bolt is used with an overlapping astragal.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Door D is a cross corridor door. So sometimes we confused the corridor doors with this type of door. However, the difference... Hello? Can you hear me? Okay. However, the difference is that the cross corridor doors are installed perpendicular in a corridor. They provide dual egress. They are installed in a 1-hour smoke barrier. However, these doors are not required to comply with Section 509.4. Can you explain that, Greg?
Okay, Ramon. Well, these can be some of the most misunderstood doors in the entire hospital, and rightfully so, because they're in a 1-hour wall but both the Life Safety Code and North Carolina State Building Code specifically call out cross corridor smoke barrier doors as not being required to be rated. So when you're dealing with cross corridor smoke barrier doors, it's a 1-hour wall, but the doors are not rated. They're not required to be rated. These doors are required to be dual egress, though, with vision panels in each leaf, and they have many of the same requirements as a pair of fire-rated doors, which probably adds to the confusion, but they're not subject to compliance with NFPA 80. That's the key takeaway. The door panels are required to be substantial doors, 1 3/4 inches thick, providing a minimum clear width of 41.5 inches in an 8-foot corridor. In I-2 and ambulatory care facilities, the doors must be self-closing or automatic closing by smoke detection, and the maximum undercut is 3/4 inch. There's that fire door limitation again. However, positive latching is not required based on 709.5 exception 1 in the North Carolina State Building Code and 18378 in the Life Safety Code. Interestingly enough, though, the vision panel is required to be 20-minute fire rated and is stated as such in section 709.51 of the North Carolina State Building Code and 18379 of the Life Safety Code.
Thank you, Greg.
Oh, wait, I got one more thing,
okay.
Sorry. I forgot to mention, smoke gasketing is not required, but astragals, rabbits, or bevels are required at the meeting edges, and stops are required at the head and jambs of the door frames. Doors should be close-fitting with operational tolerances, and no center mullions or louvers are allowed.
Okay, that's a long list, right? See, it's going to change.
I didn't do this stuff.
Well, I'm sorry. You know, sometimes the doors and hardware is a very dry topic, but it's important because there's a lot of regulation. We need to comply with the local fire, building codes and the NFPA. And this is about life safety. So let's get into this. All of these were corridor doors. As you can see, they were not fire rated. Let's talk a little bit about fire-rated doors. So let's get into the depth here. So now we are going to show this is a 20-minute fire, a door installed in a 1-hour barrier wall, typically found in this case when you want a connection between two adjacent smoke compartments. What are the requirements of this type of door?
Ramon, okay, so this is an example of a smoke barrier door located in a wall that's part of a non-rated room in this case and would otherwise be a non-rated door if not for the 1-hour smoke barrier. Okay, it's not a cross-corridor application, so there's no particular exemption on this door. So this door is a smoke barrier door, but it's not, again, the cross-corridor application, so you have to look at the requirements for a door located in a 1-hour fire barrier. So the rating required is reduced to 1/3 hour or 20 minutes instead of 45 minutes, and that's allowed by table 716.5 in the North Carolina State Building Code and table 8342 in the Life Safety Code for doors and smoke barriers. The vision panel is not required in this instance, but if provided, it must be 20 minutes to match the rating of the door. Perimeter smoke gasketing is required in this instance because it's part of the listing requirements for the rating, for the fire rating.
Okay. So door F is an exit door located in a stairwell. In this case, we are showing a single door in a 2-hour fire rated wall. And according to the table, 716.5 for the building code is required to be 90-minute rated. Can you give us additional requirement for these type of doors?
Ramon, the fire doors located in fire barriers have the most requirements of all the doors in our hierarchy. Fire doors are required to comply with the requirements of NFPA 80. Doors are required to be fire rated in accordance with the wall rating, 45 minutes in a one-hour fire barrier and 90 minutes in a two-hour fire barrier and so on. The door is an example, or this door is an example of a 90-minute fire-rated door and a two-hour fire barrier at the exit stair. The door is required to latch and be self-closing in compliance with NFPA 80. Gasketing is also needed to meet UL 10C, UL 1784, and NFPA 105, which are positive pressure and smoke and draft control requirements associated with fire doors. Louvers are prohibited, of course. Glazing is not required, but is recommended on stair doors and would need to be rated for 90 minutes to match the door rating in this case. In this case, it would also be limited to 100 square inches. The information for this can be found in Table 716.5 in the North Carolina State Building Code and 8342, Table 8342 in the Life Safety Code. In cases where the design calls for a more transparency at the stairwell, complete assemblies can be specified with substantial amounts of glazing. However, these systems are specifically tested and approved as an assembly for a complete wall and door rating that meets the requirements of the code. In high-rise construction, we have to take into consideration the requirements to keep smoke out of the stairwell when evacuating the building during a fire, and a door sweep is often used in these instances to further seal the undercut, stairwell pressurization and such.
Thank you, Greg. Continue with the fire-rated doors. The door F1 is a double door fire-rated found in rated room like soil rooms. What are the requirements for these type of doors?
Okay, Ramon, this is an example of a pair of doors in a fire barrier with the same requirements as the door we just looked at. However, since this is a pair of doors with an active and an inactive leaf, the inactive leaf will require an automatic flush bolt at the top and bottom of the door due to the fire rating. However, a UL-listed auxiliary fire latch can be used at the meeting edge of the doors in lieu of the bottom bolt. This varies by door type and needs to be confirmed with the door manufacturer. An astragal may or may not be required as part of the door listing and also needs to be confirmed with the door manufacturer. However, gasketing may be required to meet air and smoke infiltration requirements at that meeting edge of the door. If it's a corridor location, as shown here, an astragal seal should be provided at minimum to resist the passage of smoke at that meeting edge. If an overlapping astragal is used, it will require a coordinator to allow the inactive leaf to close before the active leaf, ensuring a properly latched condition. Two active leaves using fire exit hardware can also be used in this condition. In this case, both leaves close and latch independently of each other because the fire exit hardware can't be dogged and would be allowed with panic hardware. This ensures a positively latched condition whenever the doors are closed.
Thank you. So, Greg, what happens when the door is located in a partition that has to be 1 hour smoke barrier and 1 hour fire barrier? Just the case of F2. Can you give us a little bit of the requirement of that type of doors?
Sure. This is an example of a door located in both a smoke barrier and a fire barrier. The fire barrier is, and when I say that, I mean the fire barrier is there because it's part of a one-hour rated room, and in this case, requires a 45-minute door when looking at Table 716.5 in the North Carolina State Building Code and Table 8342 in the Life Safety Code. The normally required 20-minute door is superseded by the more stringent requirement for a 45-minute door, and if a vision panel is provided, it would need to match the 45-minute rating of the door.
Okay, thank you. Let's take a little bit of break in terms of the doors. So let's talk about the NFPA 80 and the requirement for fire doors. We know that NFPA 80 regulates the installation and maintenance of assemblies and devices that they are used to protect openings. in walls, floors, and ceiling against the spread of fire and smoke in, into, or out of the building. So, Greg, can you elaborate a little bit more in terms of the clearances and the, those tolerances that those type of door needs to have?
Sure. Okay, Ramon, fire door assemblies must meet the requirements of NFPA 80, and that requires them to be tested and inspected yearly. In addition to the maximum 3/4 inch undercut that we talked about earlier, the doors must also be within tolerance for gap allowance between the door and frame. For doors made of wood, the clearance between door and frame is 1/8 of an inch, and the clearance between the meeting edges on a pair of doors is also 1/8 of an inch. Doors made of steel must meet the same requirements, but they allow a plus or minus 1/16 of an inch in both instances.
Okay. Thank you very much. So, as we said, the NFPA 80 requires an annually testing of all the fire and inspecting of all the fire doors. Sometimes this is a nightmare for facility. So we are recommending 4 steps of create a program of developing this maintenance program. Our 4th step is, take an inventory of all your fire doors, prioritize a list of the fire door depending on their condition, fix each one of the doors that require any fixing or maintenance throughout the entire year, and then document your fire door maintenance program. This graphic, it was developed by the American Society of Healthcare Engineering and shows the common reason of the door failure and when they were tested. I'm just gonna pick some of them. As you can see, the first one is the latch failure. This is the most common reason for failure in a door. And we know that the code established that all fire doors must stay closed in a case of fire, so it's important to check the latching. Other element is the missing closers. All fire doors needs to be able to self-close. And another typical mistake is you find fire door block and the operation is damaged, and they need to be 100% operational. Okay, now that we took a break, let's talk about exterior doors, Greg. In our case, this is the door H is an exit discharge door. What can you tell us about this pair of doors?
Well, Ramon, since this is an exterior door, the exit discharge doors will need to consider the effects of weather and wind load requirements, especially in coastal areas where hurricanes are a distinct possibility. Section 1609 of the North Carolina State Building Code and ASCE 7 provide criteria for wind load analysis that can be used to determine the requirements for exterior door units, including windborne debris, impact resistance, and anchoring methods. Depending on the wind loads calculated at the opening, a design pressure rating can be determined for the door. Higher design pressure ratings can limit door size, daylight opening size, or the type of hardware that can be used on the door. Additional hardware such as weather gasketing, door sweeps, and rain drips are used to provide a perimeter seal around the door opening and prevent water infiltration.
Thank you, Greg. So, Greg, what happened with this type of door, the door H1, when you have a swing-in door? What are the complications that this type of door can, present?
Well, Ramon, and we deal with this a lot in the state of Florida because we have very strict hurricane protocols down there in the sense that every product has to have, a Florida product approval that meets certain requirements. So we're very limited on, and I'm getting to that point, is this example is an in-swing condition. So we need to take weather into consideration, but we also need to swing in the direction of egress travel because the space is considered an assembly space in our example here. And the occupant load, let's say it exceeds 49. So these doors need to swing into the building and they will require panic hardware as well. And in hurricane-prone areas, this can limit the choices, as I was alluding to, for hardware somewhat, because there tends to be more options for outswinging versus inswinging exterior doors, as you can imagine, with those pressures. To further complicate matters in this example, the owner has requested that we provide security hardware on these doors to prevent access into the building from the courtyard after hours. Unfortunately, because this is an assembly space, the North Carolina State Building Code does not allow delayed egress exit devices to be used in this instance. This identifies a conflict between building security and building egress. So this type of situation would need to be identified early in the design process so a viable alternative solution could be developed. One possible solution to this scenario would be to provide additional doors to satisfy the exiting requirements from the courtyard. This would allow the pair leading back into the building to be secured and to be outswing doors. All these things, to some degree, need to be taken into consideration when designing for courtyards, rooftop areas, or balcony egress going back into the building.
Okay. Thank you, Greg. So just to come back to the means of egress components, what can you tell us about this exit-discharge door that is an exterior door?
Okay, well, this is pretty straightforward, but this door, Ramon, provides exit-discharge, very important door, from the exit stair to the exterior of the building. The door would need to take weather, of course, into consideration and wind load requirements in hurricane-prone areas. A means for access may be required by first responders, depending on the local jurisdiction. A Knox box or other means may be needed to provide access to the building near the opening to serve this purpose. A vision panel should be provided so those exiting the stair can see anyone that might be in the immediate path outside the stair door. And panic hardware may be required depending on the type of occupancy and occupant load discharging from the stair.
Thank you, Greg. So now we're going to integrate the technology into the doors. And can you tell us about what are the conflicts that happen when you add technology, a solution into special needs of privacy, security, and control access of those doors? Can you take the next three slides and go over those three, please?
Sure. Let's revisit the smoke barrier door from earlier that we looked at and assume that the owner wants to add a measure of security to these same doors. And since these doors, in this case, do not require positive latching hardware, the door would likely have magnetic locks on each leaf. Let's also assume egress is required in both directions to reach our two exits at each end of the plan. This pair of dual egress doors illustrates two types of locking conditions commonly found along egress paths. So the first here, the door on the right swinging north is classified in the code as an access-controlled egress door, and the door on the left swinging south is a delayed egress door. The access-controlled egress door requires a fire alarm connection, a push-to-exit button that directly releases the magnet on those magnetic locks, and a motion sensor that also directly releases the magnet. Next slide. So we'll look at the other side of the doors.
Yep, let's see.
There okay, you go. You had it. Go back one.
One more? Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so this is the other side where we need to allow egress, emergency egress through. So this is delayed egress, the delayed egress door leaf. And it's normally secured on the north side in this case. However, egress is required to the south, so delayed egress exit device must be used in conjunction with specific signage requirements. And when the way it's set up is when an occupant pushes on the delayed egress device, an irreversible process starts sounding an alarm or alarm sounds in the device, and it releases after 15 seconds. This allows egress through at that point in time through the normally secured door after the delay. Now, in some jurisdictions, the delay can be extended to 30 sections with AHJ approval. One important point to keep in mind is that no more than two delayed egress devices can be installed in an egress path as required by the North Carolina State Building Code, provided the combined delay does not exceed 30 seconds. So 30 seconds seems to be the most they want to delay anything. This is an exception for this is an exception for I-2 facilities in Section 1010.1975. NFPA 101 has completely removed this requirement for I-2 occupancies in recent editions of the code. Delayed egress requirements are addressed in Section 721611 of the Life Safety Code and 1010.197 of the North Carolina State Building Code. And access control egress doors are addressed in 72162 of the Life Safety Code and 1010.198 of the North Carolina State Building Code. Go to the next slide,
so
please.
So we're just almost, our time is completely gone. So what we're going to do, we're not going to talk about stairwell and reentry. So let's see the next one. Okay, I just want to close out this presentation. If you remember at the beginning of the presentation, we said that after the fire of the Hartford Hospital, Dr. Stuart Hamilton said, we are going to investigate this and we are going to change the way that hospitals are built. 50 years later, we can say that we have safer places or safer hospitals. We need to continue implementing these strategies, these code requirements in our building, because when we do this, we are honoring the people who had accident and died in fires in a way that we can learn about those tragedies and we can apply to make our buildings safer. So this concludes our presentation. Thank you very much for your attention, and it was a pleasure to be with you today. Thank you.
Thank you, Greg and Raymond. We don't have any time for Q&A, but I'm sure these guys can hang out in the back if you have any questions or something like that you want to address. Thank you so much.
Yep.
This is a penetration in a wall, guys. A door is a penetration in a barrier is what it is. And we appreciate you telling us how the best way to take care of that penetration. We're getting ready to do a break. A cookie break is our promise, but coming back, 3:45, we're going to learn about how to prepare for a survey. There's also the associate forum, which starts at 3:45. It's downstairs. Where the reception was last night. Am I missing anything, Debbie? Oh, my gosh. Completely different on the registration for the associate members that have ever registered for the annual for a booth. It takes 4 minutes. We got a completely different software package to go to deal with that. It'll be a first, so we're excited about it. Hopefully, we're going to step up our game a little bit. That'll be at the associate forum downstairs. See you back at 15 minutes. For the last presentation of the day. Thank you, guys.